U.
T.
F.
U.
T.
F.
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 U.
T.
Hello, foodies, and welcome back to Food in Review, your tri-weekly dose of FIFA Ultimate Team discussions. We are, of course, reviewing the player that got released. We will talk about tactics and instruction as a part of foodcoaching.com. And today is, of course, June 7th already. Time flies when you're having fun. Almost time for the Euros, and who knows, maybe we'll actually throw in some Euro content as well in the coming weeks. It is episode 150 of our third season, making it 284 in total. And my name is John, also known as Food Coaching, and I am not alone tonight. Joining me is head coach of foodcoaching.com. It is none other than Aaron Glue. Hello, Aaron.
Yo, guys. How's it going? Always a pleasure to be here on a Monday.
Good to have you on. Yeah, we discussed you came on Friday, but I had some things going on, so I couldn't make Friday either. So we just moved everything to Monday. Thank you for being so flexible.
Pleasure. And it was a shame I missed the podcast on Friday as well. But hopefully I can share some interesting insight today.
I'm pretty sure you will. And joining us is, I should of course not forget your nickname, by the way. Do you want to do the honors tonight?
Angel of the North.
The Angel of the North himself. And of course, you all know him by Mr. Berbatov, but I like to call him today Mr. Murto, because he is the second part of our lethal weapon combination, me being Rix, of course. It is none other than Nishant. Hello, Nishant.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me back on. Thanks for the reference, John. I take it you guys moved it because, well, you'd really needed the panache on the pod. And that's why you said, well, we'll do this Monday first thing with Nishant once he's back from his break. So really, really appreciate the word of confidence, lads.
Talking about your break, how has your trip been? You've been to Scotland. I've read in the news.
Oh, yeah.
I saw the papers going wild there. Maniac driving on the roads.
That was probably me. I went to Scotland, rented a car. So that's the driving reference for our listeners. Drove about 1,700 kilometers or about 1,100 miles for those who believe in different metric systems, if you will. But fantastic. Good kind of tired. Was out of house after 18 months or so after the COVID-19 slightly rules have been relaxed. So it was quite a reinvigorating experience, cathartic to an extent, one could say. So really, really enjoyed the little things and happy to be back and still managed to finish goal two in weekend league. So hey ho, here we are and happy to talk foot.
Which is pretty amazing though. Aaron, how was your weekend league? Did you play?
I mean, you can only because you convinced me to. So I was having a real rough ride of games in Rivals. And I had decided I was going to take this weekend off. I know it was a good incentive to play, but I figured I'd had enough of weekend league the past 4 or 5 weeks. But then John convinced me to do it. And then I did. And I hit 21 wins, which puts me in gold one. And I was really frustrated because I was at least 5 defeats I took, which I shouldn't have lost. And, I'll not go too much into mechanics and stuff like that. And we've talked about that endlessly, probably throughout the year. So I think elite was definitely doable. But I take my hat off to the opponents who genuinely outplayed me. And there were some real high caliber players out there, I thought, this weekend. And to those who beat me 1-0 in like the 89th minute, 3 games in a row, I hate you. still happy to beat the sides, but it's cool. It's all cool.
Yeah, now you're wondering what I did in the weekend league, probably, right? Ultimate team of the season. And who forgot to redeem his weekend league access? I did. So I spoke
to you. That lethargy kicks in. If you already have a team of the year, CR7, I don't see why you want to be dialing into the madness that is Ultimate Tots weekend. So I get it from your point of view. You're pretty chilled out now, aren't you?
No, I had a horrible weekend, but that's beside the point. I was actually planning on playing. And then I spoke to Aaron, I think Friday, right, Aaron?
Yeah.
You were playing Rivals. I said, you should just play Weekend League, man. Weekend League is much easier. I'm pretty sure everyone tries to play Weekend League this weekend. So I think especially like the first 10, 15 matches, it's much more fun and much more relaxing than playing high Rivals, Div 1, right?
Yeah, and you're right, though, and it was. It was weird because like the first five games, I think I ended up 5-1, I think, before I stopped. And I was like, oh, yeah, okay, this is good. And that was definitely the boost that I needed. So pretty happy with how it ended. Shame you missed out.
Yeah, so what happened is just Saturday, I was like, you know what, actually, I did some work, watched the Formula One, spent some time with the family. I was like, you know what, yeah, I'm going to take some hours, I'm going to play weekly. So I booted up my Xbox. Put it up the menu, click weekend league, says you didn't redeem access. Like, do you want to redeem now? Yeah, sure. Click. Hey, why can't I enter? Okay, should back go back to the menu, right? Yeah, that sometimes happens. So back to the menu, come back in. Yeah. I'm closed out. Where am I closed out? Oh, because I did forget to redeem and I redeemed for next week. So yeah. That happens.
I think you reverse do know EA. EA is now sat there thinking, whoa, this guy redeemed it on a Saturday, but he didn't redeem it this weekend. He redeemed it for next. What does he know that we don't know yet? Jamie, tell us, what are you? Have you been speaking to foot coaching lately?
Exactly. That could be something as well, yeah. By the way, we don't know any Jamie. Just saying.
Oh, yeah, sorry, allegedly. This is Jamie, is my imaginary teddy bear friend.
Yeah, I'm just saying it out loud because now that someone in Canada is listening to this, like, Jamie? No, pure coincidence. We should get a banner saying every name that's been named on the podcast is pure coincidental, made-up names.
Yeah, fortunately, they don't trademark their names, so that's really good.
That's it. That is indeed good. But I don't want anyone to get fired because of us.
Yep, 100%.
Guys, so I'll probably play with next week if the rewards are any good, but I have no idea what's going to be the case, actually. So we'll see. Quite honestly, yeah, it's fine as well. It's so hot. I'm, like, done with trying to make the maximum performance out of it. And even though it is off-season now, if you didn't qualify for the Global Series as a pro, you're probably done now. We're still getting a lot of coaching, Aaron, so we don't have to be bored during the summer, I think, by the looks of it.
That's what we want. And I actually think it's a good time to keep practicing. I think if less of the higher caliber players are playing, it should mean it's an easier ride through Rivals and Weekend League. So I definitely encourage people to keep going. I think this is a good time. I think, is there slightly less pressure? I mean, there's less probably rewards and content, so I know it will put some people off. But I think this is where the practice pays off, though, right? It's like pre-season, kind of. You know, if you keep playing now, I mean, no, because let's be honest, overall, 90, 95% of the game is going to be similar next year. They might nerf a few things, add a few things, but overall, the key mechanics that we coach on, John, are still going to be important next year. So I would say keep playing. Hook up with us, tell your friends, your family, your pets, book some sessions.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
If your cat needs a coaching session, just send them our way. No, but I get the question a lot, though. Why would we, do we still work or do we stop coaching now? Or is it actually viable to get a coaching or wait for FIFA 22? That's the most commonly asked thing right now. Although it's still like a proper 3 months away. Maybe four. I don't even know if there's a release date yet. Somewhere between 3.5-4 months, I think. People ask us a lot, why would we still want coaching now? But like Aaron says, I think 90% of the game always stays the same over the years. That's a big, for us, a big advantage of having a yearly game. But for many, of course, a big disadvantage of getting the yearly game. But I think that's part of it. So I don't see many mechanics changing too much and stuff. Some slight.
They haven't announced. They've not announced that they're going to change the engine that powers the game, which would be fairly considerable. So I think if that stays the same, then how the game plays out, it's going to be relatively similar. So that's why I say keep practicing. Email, tweet us, get in touch.
Yeah, very cool.
I think on the flip side, just very quickly to reiterate the message, because you're hearing from the coaches, you might as well hear from the student here as well. I think one of the big reasons why I seem to have done so well in this iteration compared to the last one is because I took coaching from John during this time. Exactly during this time, I think. I went on to play until the last weekend league as well. And to Aaron's point, one, of course, you have an easier ride now that people, the competitive people, are falling off. And also you get to use your fantastic players that you have fought so hard for in the weekend league. You've probably been lucky enough to pack a few reds. So that's really good to use your team now. If not now, then what have you grinded for, really? But if you go on, you will notice that the tryhards are the ones that are left at the end playing the weekend leagues, you know, the last few weekend leagues. And if you take a coaching session and you really work with John and Aaron now, then you can really put your test, put your progress to test in the last few weekend leagues, which, regardless of rewards, at that time and at that stage, only the tryhards and really hardcore players are still playing. So essentially, you're testing yourself, if not against the best, against, let's say, very competitive players in the end, because it's a shorter, smaller pool. So you really come out well, you come out really well finished off for the next iteration. So just wanted to put that point in as well. I think this is probably the best time to take coaching. So you're setting up yourself for good success, because even the 85 rated goals you pack in first week of FIFA 22 are going to be worth hundreds of thousands if it's a meta card. So you're really setting up yourself for success.
Yeah, thank you for confirming that as an experienced trainee. You know what I think this weekend was funny? Not only did I forget to redeem my weekend league, but I expected a Conte SBC for being the man of the match in the Champions League final, of course. Conte did get a new card. But Nishant, what can we tell about this Conte card?
Oh yeah, the what if card. It's slightly more expensive. Well, it's factor of 5 more expensive, but if you are, you know, passionate about Conte being in your team at this stage, granted he's a fantastic player and has been in real life, of course, but in the game has been usable, more than usable in the earlier parts of FIFA, you can get for a fraction of price other CDMs who can do that role fantastically. But instead, we got Javi Martinez, which of course is much maligned. If you look at Footbin, if you look at social media, if you look at our Discord, there were a lot of unhappy faces, and I was probably the exception to that. I was very happy with Javi. One, I didn't have to sink 2 million coins because I didn't have any fodder. I just had coin into Conte, so that was really nice. But two, he was the lifesaver this weekend league, and I know Aaron and I will get into weekend league player bases and oppositions and tactics in a second. But man, what a card! I'm calling him Javi the Jedi. Just precise. He does what he says on the tin and then some. I mean, I don't know how much you want me to, write a love song to Javi Martinez, but that card is fantastic value. And I ran him this weekend as my primary, as one of two CDM pairings alongside Essien in a 4-2-3-1 balanced. And he was, the way I best describe it, is he was the defensive Boutra. So Boutra Genua, the guy who is the attacker, he's always in the right place at the right time, despite his work rates, despite the fact that, you know, his skill moves, he has that sauce. He always goes by, and this guy is just the defensive boot, right? He's always, always so precise. He's squatting down Team of the Years, left, right, and center, especially the saucy Neymars and Mbappe that I came across a few against really good professionals. Always in the right place, right time. I cannot stress enough that you need to look past his work rates. Remember, he has a high and average body type. He has a 6'4" frame, 99 jumping. You put a shadow on him, you're maxing out his defensive stats. His pace is, well, yeah, if you're playing to the meta, he's not going to be zipping around, right? But honestly, you don't need him to zip around if you're playing, let's say, with a slightly more nuanced method. He's perfect. His work rates are not an issue. That's the takeaway. If you guys take away anything today, his work rates are not the issue at all. If anything, they help him be the perfect CDM for me.
That is some recommendation, though. I'm almost inclined to just do him to see how much you can be wrong. But my club is just as dry as concrete now, so no way I can actually do him. He requires an 86 with 60 chemistry and one team of the week or team of the season. And I think he requires an 85 with the same requirements, but with a buy-in player as well. So, decently priced, I think, as well. It does look cool. Aaron, what do you think?
Well, I totally neglected to look at him because of his base card. I didn't even look at his stats. How bad is that? I have to say, Nishant, you have done an outstanding job of selling him. I'm currently now looking at him with the shadow on and thinking, how can I fit him in my team? Because, interestingly, this may be a bit of a segue into our tactics and observations from weekend league, but what I noticed is when I went to a 4-2-3-1 this weekend, which I did the variant with the cams as opposed to the wingers.
The 4-2-3-1.
Yeah.
Good set.
So my two CDMs, right? So I've got team of the season, Vasquez, who's obviously a right midfielder, very quick and has decent strength. He is one of them, and I can't remember who the other one is. But what I noticed is that both of them central midfielders are quite weak. So actually having a strong CDM, I haven't had a strong CDM for a long while, but would make a big difference, actually. Someone who can move, is in the right position, and strong enough to win the ball back in midfield. I've sold him. I don't know what to do now, because I think, do I wait and see what else comes out this week, or do I just go for it?
Yeah, I don't want to induce FOMO amongst the listeners and yourself, Aaron. To be completely honest, he's not Moses parting the sea, right? He has his limitations in the sense that you could argue his 3-star weak foot is a concern. What I really like about him is the fact that he has stats in the right places. If you look at his composure, his agility, his balance for a 6'4" guy, and he turns really, really quickly is what I noticed, because one of my fears was the high and average body type coupled with his size, 6'4", whatever stats you give him, he's still not turning. You'll have the 5'9" and 5'8", 5'7" players who will just nip the ball away. You'll have the lean body types that will basically glitch through him, the Vamans of the world. But he, with his high and average body type, he just blocks the ball and sits down the opposition, and that happens several times. So usually when you do these kind of players, you don't notice them. This guy, I actually actively noticed where he was able to intercept, pass to the right person. Granted, you position him well. Of course, you need to be nuanced, right? You take a second to before you pass. And then he was as Arsenal fans would call it, he was a pre-assist king, essentially, in game for me, because he would make these incisive passes that would allow me to break away. But because of his composure, the opponent was never expecting him to actually take the ball away, because generally up until now, regardless of, unless you're running your Frankies of the word, your Vieiras of the word, any CDM, even the likes of Makaleli, there's always this one moment, even when you get the ball, you don't get the ball, the other guy can get it if he tackles you in the right place. With Martinez, that was significantly reduced. Is why I like him so much. He was definitely my weekend league MVP. He is the sole reason why, and of course the tactics, but he's also one of the biggest reasons why I was at 15-3 this weekend. And I played some really good players, and I was also fresh in a sense that 12 days away from console, it felt like I was playing a new game. So Javi really came in and helped set the tempo. And if a player that's under 300K sets the tempo for you, where you have a team of 10 million plus, I think that's significant. That's a reasonable get.
Well, looks like his SBC expires on the 11th. So that means I can get through rewards and see where that leaves me. And maybe just come back in there and do him. I think I can just about fit him into my team. I'm not sure I can get max chemistry, though. That's the only thing. But I think I can link him to Mukiele at right back. I just don't have full chemistry on him. But I think I can find a way to do that.
4-3-3 flat, I link him to Vasquez and a Bundesliga right back with an icon in the middle. You'll block him in with 10 chem, but I'm sure you figured that one out as you go along.
Yeah, I've got, I need to make a few changes. I've got quite a bit of a hybrid team at the minute. I've got La Liga, Liga and Bundesliga, and I'm still rocking Neres as well. So a bit of Eredivisie. Oh, with a few icons threading it all together.
Yeah, but you're not going to, yeah, just to be clear, not going to, if you don't do him, it's not like you're missing out on Carter. It's just that he fits the system I wanted to play this weekend is probably why I'm being so vax lyrical about him.
I think that's important, actually, is playing players who fit the system. I think that's something I realized this weekend as well. And that, for me, the game changer was bringing the moments on Ri. Halfway through, I had Dalglish. I took Dalglish out and put Henri in. And as a sole striker, I think, you know, you can question his agility and his balance, I think, is a bit unfair. But actually, his physical presence, his shooting ability, just gives you... And he's still agile enough to navigate around the box. And I just thought he brought a real extra dimension, which I hadn't thought about, was actually having a big striker go up against some big defenders. And actually coming off with the ball still, whereas if you have small strikers, you just get beaten off the ball so easily. Yes, you have the advantage of being slightly more agile, but even, you know, most teams have at least one fullback at centre-back to counter that. And then everyone else pretty much is still rocking Tapsoba, who I can't get past at all. He's insane. So I think you're onto something there, though. Even if it's just one player in one position, I think can make all the difference.
I'm still using the Barella card, quite honestly, myself, midfield. Still like him very much. So, nah, I'm going to pause on him. But it's cool to give him some love, because the comments I did see about people that use him weren't all that positive, Nishan. But now I'm also sometimes I'm unsure if these players are actually used by many of these people tweeting or putting the content out online, or they just put it out because they want to be fast with it. Could be me, though.
Yeah, I played 25 games with him this weekend league, so I feel that I have a certain nuanced understanding about his weaknesses and strengths. And as I said, he certainly has weaknesses, but his uniqueness in certain stat areas combined with his frame and work rates, and I just want to reiterate work rates, the medium-low work rate, just makes him always be in the right place at the right time. The only tip I'll give to the listeners who may have done him and are not finding much use out of him, put man mark instructions if you're playing him as a CDM. His work rates will completely make him into prime Baresi playing at CDM, although we all know Baresi is the elite center back, but just wow, that's the kind of level I feel comfortable.
Race is also fine, of course.
Oh, there we are. So, that's it. But I think I've spoken vax lyrically enough about him. But I was thinking, Aaron, maybe we wanted to talk to the tactics and, you know, the 4-2-3-1. You said you really enjoyed it, bringing in moments on Ri. What else did you find, this weekend league about the 4-2-3-1 that, of course, you finished 21-9. So I'm assuming... gave you a fantastic return on the tactics, but not something that we see so often, if I may add. So this iteration, you see a lot of different varieties, recently more so the 4-3-1-2.
Yeah, so, I mean, that was my first observation, is everyone plays 4-3-1-2. It is so boring. And I know maybe some of the listeners do play it and playing it really well, but for me, I just found it really difficult to kind of keep following the crowd with that. But again, if you play it really well and it works for you, high five. I actually started this weekend league trying something a bit different, which I did 4-3-2-1. And what I really liked about that to start with is the two strikers who play just behind the main striker, their movement inside actually poses a really good threat. And it's a very, if everyone's on balance, it's a very attacking tactic. But I don't feel like you overly struggle defensively either because of the three in the middle. And you've got to play it. And I probably wasn't as skilled at playing it as I should have been. But if it's a quick passing, because there's a lot of movement and you can get balls in behind quite simply. So, and I was thinking, could this be a new meta? Not a term I particularly enjoy. But in the end, I found it just... It struggled over and over against the 4-3-1-2. But what I did become my second tactic, because I switched to the 4-2-3-1. Why did I switch to 4-2-3-1? Because I got beaten twice off two players who used it. They weren't meta players. They were just good players. And they played it really well. And what I noticed was, from an attacking perspective, with the cams, the three cams, they sit just between your defence and midfield, and it's really difficult to know what to do. Do you bring midfielders back or do you push out? And I just found that they just were able to kind of string a few good passes together, and they'd beaten me frustratingly. So I thought, I want a bit of that. So I then switched to that. One, I found it quite easy to play to. I really enjoyed the movement of Henri and Pelé, who I'd play in the cam behind him, moving left to right. It felt like I had two strikers. It felt if I was on the wing, I always had a player coming for a passing option. I found it effective bringing all of those on, come back on defence as well. It made you a bit more solid defensively, but the counter-attack was just so, so fluid. So I really enjoyed it. I didn't have my defenders on stay back, so my fullbacks, they were on balance. Everyone else pretty much stayed on balance, really. So I think I can tweak it a little bit further. But for me, I just thought it gives me so many passing options. I can play inside, outside, overlaps. You know, there's a lot more crossing opportunities I felt available as well. It's for me, it's now my go-to tactic. And then if I'm struggling, so I'll start with that. And if it's like 0-0 or if I'm 1-0 down, I'll switch to the 4-3-2-1, as I think not many players use it. It's quite unexpected. And I often find that that can get me a goal, two goals, and put me back in a good position. And I switch back to the 4-2-3-1 and see out the game.
It's a very stable formation, though. I use it. Yeah, it's my formation whenever I haven't played for a while. So last, like 2 weeks ago, Aaron, when we had the tournaments and stuff going on. I don't have much time to play myself, but if I then have to perform, I just switch back to my 4-2-3-1 always. And I think the 4-2-3-1 is so stable and so hard to break down anyways, that actually versus the 4-3-1-2, right, it does wonders, because it doesn't leave the openings for everyone. And I think that's the biggest selling point, right? It's very stable, hard to break down, and with you can actually counter the 4-3-1-2. You're not like exactly counter it, but it does not has any weaknesses against the leader because it's so
because it leaves those four who I think it gives you a really good outlet, because whether you bring them back on defense or not, they're just a real good outlet, and they seem to just be in pockets of space that are difficult to defend or almost force you to move your defense out. Or if you stand back, you have opportunities to play passes or even shoot, skill move. It just felt like you had a little bit more time on the ball, which is why I really enjoyed it. And it's definitely, I think I'm going to keep perfecting it and find ways to get the best out of it. Maybe it's come up with a couple of variations, something that's maybe a little bit more aggressive as well. But yes, I'm a big fan, Nishant. So, and I get the sense you are as well.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think it's a tactic that I will now use to build on, as just like yourself, because I have experimented with various formations this iteration, and we are a positive pod, but we do. I mean, I recall it either being 4-2-3-1 or bust last year, historically speaking. So I think the fact that this iteration has offered us ample space to be creative with the formations and tactics, that's really, you know, that needs to be applauded. So I think EA really got that right. With the 4-2-3-1, the only thing I changed to the way you set up this time was I put target man instructions on Cantona. Now that made
who
the king
central cam?
No, as a striker.
Okay, yes.
I played him as a striker with the part of the weekend league with Dembele as a cam, and part of the weekend league. No, Exeter, sorry. I'm confusing it with rivals. Dembele was the cam throughout the weekend league, throughout the run to 17 and 7. He was my cam. But it makes King Cantona into Emperor Cantona. Believe me, I have had fantastic affinity to Cantona. To Eric because of his history with Manchester United. So I don't really care if he fits or doesn't fit the meta. That was a card I was always going to have in my endgame squad. And his returns were fantastic. I think if I quickly look at my pre-weekend league and post-weekend league, he was scoring on average about 1.5 goals a game to date over a span of 90 games. But over a span of 100-odd games. but he has since started returning higher in the weekend league because a target man instruction, especially against those running the not funny, but those, let's say, aggressive meta formations, the 4-3-1-2 specifically, or even five at the back, the defenders, opposition defenders, don't really know what to do with Cantona dropping back. So you essentially have four players against the five back, if you will, no striker, and Cantona is then able to come back in, pass to Dembele, and make the run forward. So in essence, even if the opponent is playing, let's say, one depth, hypothetically speaking, or playing a very tight game, there's always some micro movement up front. And if you can really time it, that target man instruction makes Cantona unplayable at times, because if he's away from you, not alongside you, you can still get the ball off him. But if he gets away from you because of his frame, regardless of his space on the card, you cannot catch him. He will bully you and score. And he finishes off from most angles, as much as, maybe not as much as the elite CR7s of the world, but he certainly finishes quite well.
I wanted to say, he does seem like some player I've got as well.
Yeah, exactly it. Exactly it. But the only change is he's way more affordable, relatively speaking. So yeah, the only change, I would recommend listeners to try out Target Man as they experiment now that we are through Tots. I found that to be a revelation. I know I've been flirting with the Target Man instructions with other setups, but in the 4-2-3-1 specifically, it just made Eric Cantona magical. And for me to see my favorite player deliver in big games and carry the team, that alone made me want to play Weekend League, despite being tired from driving around 1,700 kilometers all over Scotland. Cantona was the emperor this Weekend League just because of that instruction. So really recommend for everybody listening to try out Target Man.
Also, if you use Eto'o, you don't think Eto'o is any good, for example, put Target Man on him, see how much he can bully, actually.
I've seen a lot of Eto'o is unplayable. I don't like that card. He's my bane this FIFA. He is, every time I come up against a Moments Eto'o, I haven't beaten a single Moments Eto'o team until now. I think it's now psychological to an extent, just like Inform Pope is. But that Eto'o card, I just can't play him.
Maybe I should get him then, at least. Hope that it does the same effect for against Aaron and I don't lose any friendlies anymore.
That's three parts in a row you've mentioned losing now, John.
Yeah, yeah, but I got to have my coach, my head coach on my high, right? So I have to make sure you're full confident.
To add my bit onto the Target Man.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask one thing though. Sorry, Aaron.
Sorry, man.
The Target Man instruction itself, right? Can you explain? Maybe I should just ask Aaron now though. What does it actually do? Because most players have it on comeback and getting behind, which makes sense. But if you put it on Target Man, what actually happens, Aaron?
Okay, so I can only base it on my observations. So my setup with the Target Man was, last weekend league I played, I was playing 4-1-4-1. I had Isak as the Target Man. And the reason why I had a Target Man was because I knew I had a lot of runners coming from deep. So my aim was to play a lot of 1-2s off of Isak and get him behind, which worked really effectively. What I liked about my observations of the Target Man is they are always facing you. And their runs are relatively, you know, limited in behind. So you always know that there's a pass there. They sit a little bit deeper. Their back's obviously to goal. Now, you can play that, I think, if you are reasonably confident with skill moons. You've got opportunities if you play the right player to use that as an opportunity as well. Wasn't for me. I mean, if you hold the left trigger, you can back into players. It can buy you some space around the box as well, which again, I think is an underused, it's not necessarily a skill move, but it's an underused attacking move as well. Those are my observations. It's just it's a reliable pivot in your team that you always know you're going to be there. But again, for me, the key is you've got to play to the strengths of that custom setting that you're putting on the player. If you don't, and you're in a mindset of playing a very different way, it's going to be hard to adjust. So me being a passer works for me. Haven't tried it in a 4-2-3-1. I think, Nishant, you've got some good suggestions for me to go and look at, tweak that. One is a Target Man, one is man mark settings on my CDMs as well. I think it's definitely usable. But again, Target Man, you need the right player, the right attributes. You can't be playing somebody who's pretty weak as a target man. They're likely to just lose possession quite a lot. I think if you were looking to play a passer there, the false nine is going to be more effective. They'll be picking up in spaces, and you know they do come deeper, and there's a little bit more movement in them. So that would be my assessment.
That's cool. Is it only viable, guys, with one striker, you think, or would it be viable on two? Or if you have two strikers, would you change instructions on your second one?
Well, I think it's viable in a two-striker system if your secondary striker that doesn't have target man instructions has specific instructions to enable, because in a 4-2-3-1, one being the cam is actually quite a key to enable those 1-2 passes, I think. So with the target man instructions, with Cantona dropping back, Dembele was always on the move, and that allowed me to have those quick 1-2s if somebody was sitting back in a 5-back system, or if somebody was pushing forward in a 4-3-1-2. I was able to create opportunities from my left attacking midfielder and my right attacking midfielders, different angles to pass in and score. So I actually scored more with my left and right forwards than I ever have this weekend league because of Cantona. But in a two-striker system, I think what you will probably need to do is adjust, I think, and you'll correct me, is adjust your secondary striker. So if one of them is playing target man, the other one needs to have certain instructions, and I'm not sure what, but just not the same come back on defense and get in behind. They need to be slightly more tuned up, because otherwise you're just, you know, you're not going to be able to bring in, unless, of course, you're expert and always ready to pull L1, R1 truggers all the time. And sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. You will not get that time and space at this stage of the cycle to be able to navigate your way if you're just an average player like I am. So I think it's slightly difficult to play a target man, I think, in a 4-4-2 for me.
Thank you.
Aaron, I don't know what you guys think.
I haven't tried it in a two-striker formation, but I do agree with the approach. I'd need to test it and see. I think if you're going to bring one deeper and more static, you need a bit of movement off of the other striker. I don't think you could play two target men. I don't think that would give you the benefit you need at all. So even if you have one on balanced, would be fine. Getting behind is obviously still pretty effective. I quite like drift wide for movement to move them into the channels. So again, that could be good for a bit of variety. But again, it's like knowing your team and knowing what your players and your instructions are actually trying to do. So if you know you've got one striker on one side as a target man, do you maybe think about how you get more runs naturally coming in and around that or beyond him? And then if you've got the other one, maybe he's drifting wide, you maybe don't want to be as aggressive with overlaps. So those, again, some of my considerations, but in all honesty, I'd need to test it out.
Yeah, talking about testing it out, though, I got one thing, though. I think it's time that Nishant make a public apology. Because he tested someone out.
So, honestly, I have been back and forth with my back line, right? So, just like everybody on the Discord.
Yeah,
and every...
just keep him on stay back. Actually, don't let him go forward. I think that's also key.
Yeah, I think just been reading up. I mean, just been using Tapsoba, going back and forth with different setups, different defenders in the system. Even was desperate enough after losing 100 skill rating points before I started Weekend League, because, you know, I was so new back to the console. I decided to have fullbacks, but just didn't work for me. So finally, I gave 95 Varane a chance at redemption to come into the SIS team. And I decided, whatever happens, I've packed 25 of them. I've played with an 87 red for the longest of time. He was a fantastic defender for me. I just need to get used to him. He doesn't need to get used to me. So I stress tested him in Div Rivals, wasn't successful, started then understanding how to use his positioning. Because what is funny with that card is, although it has 91 pace on face stats, his frame and the fact that now every opponent has a very high-rated, agile, lean winger playing up front, more or less, you need to tweak that slightly in terms of when you select him manually and defend with him and move him in and out of areas. Once that clicked into place, I now appreciate and understand why that 95-rated Varane is priced at what he is. I think it's not so much about his pace. That's, of course, it's a byproduct of what Varane gold card is. But I think It's the other thing. So just like I'm sure with Virgil van Dijk, team of the year, he is positionally fantastic, still being used, you know, widely. I think it's just that that switch needs to click in. And once it clicked for me, the point John was trying to say, I apologize, of course, that I'd benched Varane for the longest of times, having packed him untradeable. He did not even see my, you know, he did not even see my subs bench. But now him flanked by Hernandez on the left. And by the way, that left back card playing at left back, it's lights out good. Yeah. And Desai, who's back in the team for good. I don't know what EA have done, but Desai is just unbelievable alongside Varane and Theo. So I think Theo has been the key, but the apology has to go out to Varane because I was slightly upset having packed him and not being able to use him, but it was me, Varane, not you. So if you're listening, you're welcome back on the pod. Come say hi. And if you sign for Manchester United, then oh well, then fine. I probably won't pack you again ever, but I'll get a signed shirt eventually. But yeah, that was my public apology to Varane. A fantastic card. And of course, Tapsoba for 1/10 the price is a no-brainer. But if you have a Varane, you use him, you don't bench him.
Exactly, yes. And I want to accept some apologies as well for everyone listening. Because, you know, when Serie A came out and I said, guys, this is the Varane card, it is nuts. It is probably one of the best defenders I've ever used. He's insane. And a couple of my pro friends used him this weekend. And they say, actually, John, he's pretty good. But don't let everyone know. Okay, that's too late. But then this Friday, of course, Ultimate Team of the Season came out. And who was there? Bada boom, bada bam. It was Stefan de Vrij. So even EA is acknowledging it is actually one of the best cards you can have at center defense. So adore that card. It is so freaking awesome card. Just wanted to highlight that once again. So if you're still sleeping on him and can still fit him in, just do him. Because he is really awesome. And you guys will see once he plays on the European Championship next week. If he plays, you'll definitely see how good he is in real life as well. But anyways, there was a little contest as well, right? We did last week. We were going into the semi-finals of our Team of the Season squad selection. And this one was a tough one. And I wasn't on the show to like get my boys from the Serie A all sold up actually on you guys, so couldn't purchase, like convince anyone that it's actually the right choice, because it was the Serie A Team of the Season squad versus the Ligue 1 Team of the Season squad. And of course Chris invented this show off, and I have no other ways than just I could say the results, but Chris sent in a voice message to play tonight who actually won. And I'm just going to give one spoiler. The winning team won. You could vote on all social media channels. They were actually on our... we got one on our Instagram. Which makes the total end result, as of today, the difference with one vote. The team who won with one vote difference. So, but let's give the word to Chris now.
Hi guys, Grandpapa Mac here with the result of the last semi-final, Serie A versus Ligue 1. And I can confirm, this is not fake news, but the team going through to the final to face La Liga is the mighty Ligue 1. Neymar and Mbappe have made their way to the final. It was a really tight competition and only two votes were in it. But congratulations to those guys, and I'll let you guys discuss the teams for the finals. Have a great show. Cheers.
Thanks for announcing that, Chris, and thanks for sending it in. And Chris will be back on the show this Wednesday, because Wednesday we will announce the winner of our Team of the Season selection, which will be either La Liga Team of the Season squad or the Ligue 1 season squad. So yeah, Serie A actually lost in the end with one single vote. I'm pretty sure it could have gone on into the final. Is it a deserved one in your opinion, Nishant?
No, not at all. My rationale, I mean, I was listening to the pod and I understand the balance angle of having, you know, front heavy lineup, you know, versus, let's say, a more balanced Serie A squad. But honestly, have you seen those frontline members of the league on? I mean, it doesn't matter who you're running at the back. That Neymar alone destroyed a few folks in the East Asia qualifiers this weekend that I was watching. That Neymar card is lights out good. I mean, and I know, Aaron, you want to quickly discuss the, I'm not sure if you have time now, but discuss this whole, what defines a good player. That card is the pure definition of the quintessential, essentially, of what is a good player. I mean, that card can do wonders. You can say whatever you want, but if you have a Neymar in your squad, for that alone, I would have given Ligue 1 the award.
Okay, so you do agree with the winner now?
Yeah.
Okay. Aaron, did Ligue 1 win here deservingly, or should Team of the Season Serie A get one or two more votes in here?
It's
really tied that way.
So I root for the underdog, right? So I think Ligue 1 over the course of this FIFA has been absolutely juiced. I mean, if you were committed to that, setting up a team for Ligue 1 players, you would have absolutely loved this year. But actually, some of my more favourite players, I think, have come out of Syria. So I would say Syria probably deserves it. I think, interestingly, I came up against the Lukaku card a couple of times. That's a pretty juiced card. Because he's got it all, and the strength, he just bulldozes past you with the right chemistry style, reasonably agile, great finishing, good speed. I like the underdog, right? So I go Serie A. And why I think, you know, this kind of extends into the Euros. I think Italy are the dark horses. Every time I've mentioned it this weekend, I've been chatting Euros. Everyone's like, Italy, no chance. They couldn't even name three players in the current Italy team.
No. I think I've put it as Italy as the winners, if I'm honest.
Well, no, I think they could win it, but I think I genuinely think they're the underdogs, dark horse. I don't think you ask anybody, or I've asked people, who would you say the four semi-finalists are? Italy don't even get mentioned. Some people have even said to me, are they even in it?
Yeah, well, I wouldn't count on their opinion on who wins instead.
Italy Wales final.
No, but I mean, they are in the group stage with Turkey, which Turkey has actually a pretty cool squad. So don't underestimate Turkey in here. But Switzerland, they should win, and Wales, they should win, right?
Don't write off Wales.
Sorry?
Don't write off Wales.
Well, in this situation, I actually might.
Depends where Wales play. If they're playing near golf courses, then yeah, you might as well write them off.
No, but I mean, they got Donnarumma, of course, like a great goalkeeper, right? I won't go into this, but there's so many underrated players in this squad. Like Spinazzola from Roma might honestly be, if he plays left back, right, he might surprise everyone in this European Championship. He is so freaking amazing. I've seen them play this Friday. It's a brilliant, this is a really cool squad. And then, of course, like Jorginho, who in Chelsea might be underrated, maybe, because you don't get mentioned too much, right? But man, that's some player. Chiesa is in beautiful, Belotti. Yeah, this is going to be such an awesome squad. I really like the attacking way they play these days, and they are so underrated. But then again, it is somewhat saying that the most expensive, or I think the best player they have, is either the goalkeeper, Donnarumma, he probably is the most valuable player, or Barella, who people will now finally see. And I'm talking from Juventus point, right? That's one player I'm really jealous on, the Nicola Barella card in real life. I really want to see him perform on the European Championship. So yeah, I've made these guys my outside champion, actually, in most of my rankings. So you've heard it here first.
Well, as you do that, I am adding Spinazzola into my fantasy football team. I'm taking that as a recommendation.
Yeah, definitely do it. If you still have the chance, please, please, please do it. I got one question from chat, though. Amr says, would you guys take a risk and play three in the back for a week in league, or is it doomed to fail due to pace abusers in this game? Let's ask head coach Aaron.
I wouldn't use it as a starting formation. I would have it in my armory to switch to. I have had it. I don't currently. I think like a 3-4-1-2 can create some really aggressive overloads. I think overall, though, you will struggle, especially against the pace of some of the players now as well. I don't think it is effective in terms of stopping the through balls. There is a variant where you can put a defensive midfielder in there as well. I just feel it's very unnatural, and I just think that it won't be as effective as you think. I wouldn't set up to have a whole game on three at the back.
Okay, before I say something else, Nishant, would you try it? Dare it? Recommend?
Yeah,
it?
Of course. So I have,
of course,
I mean, I played three at the back. I mean, for the longest of period, especially in the earlier parts of the cycle. And I'll tell you why I stopped playing it. I think is the power curve gets caught on. You know, the way the system usually works is packing the middle of the field works well when there is a selection or a limited pool of players. You can always catch up. Your wing backs are on comeback on defense and whatnot. So you always... The catch with that is it becomes a 5-back, or the way you like to see it, 7-back sometimes, depending on what instructions you put in. But with the recent advent and addition of players that are very saucy and silky on the ball, just take Dembele for an example. I mean, him alone can, with all the La Croqueta cancels that I've seen this weekend, and people becoming really accustomed to, let's say, certain game-breaking tactics, three at the back, you're putting yourself at a disadvantage. Especially because if one card doesn't get you, a Dembele doesn't get you, a Vasquez well, a Vasquez doesn't get you, a Bamba well, and three at the back for that reason becomes slightly too defensive at this stage of the game. With that said, I know a lot of good FIFA players who are good FIFA players, like i.e. don't over abuse the in-game in-game mechanics, who have succeeded very well with 3-5-2, but then they are the top cream of the crop, 0.0001% of the players. So unless you're one of them, you rather save yourself the headache and go for something that's slightly more expansive at this stage, because you know the TOTS player are a scene leveler, if you will. They level the playing field slightly, so be more expansive, take the risk. Three at the back isn't in fashion anymore.
Yeah, so I've been playing 3-5-2 lately.
I knew you were going to say that.
And I'm quite enjoying it, because all these true balls go to the center. You get three center defenders, including, of course, the Rice, so there's no true balls really coming through too much. You get two CDMs where you can have them both on cover center or just one, and man mark and the other one in good passing lane, making it even harder to get a true ball in. And then you got the two wingers who can just wreak havoc on counterattacks, and you can always play under the nasty high pressure that's being played a lot, especially with the 4-3-1-2. If they go 4-3-1-2, you always have those two wingers. I just press hook sidelines, just go from there. Can always play the ball towards them. And of course, there's the free cam who actually is able to obliterate the 4-3-1-2 because there's no CDM in that formation. So I found it like a near perfect counter for those very aggressive, high attacking, very high pressuring true balls, Paramus in the 4-3-1-2, and I've been really enjoying it. And I think I won multiple drafts drawing a 3-5-2 as well, because people are not used to it anymore. I think you got two types of things, right? You got the meta, who's probably now 4-3-1-2, which is pretty clear, or playing 5-3-2. But most players are definitely going for the narrow formations now, I think. If I look at the stats, there's an app, but I won't name it here because we don't have a sponsor. but who gathers like worldwide data from it? Definitely most of the formations are small or narrow now. And if you use the 3-5-2 versus that, it can be very strong. But like what I want to say is there's two type of players. The players that follow the meta, right, get good in that and just play along, and are very good in that because they're just like a little bit better than everyone else. Or the players like I hope to be, because I'm not that good anymore at my old age, where I know what the meta is and try to make something that is actually very good at doing that. But then again, I am also very confident in my defensive skill. Is that if anything, I'm pretty certain I can defend really well. So I wouldn't wouldn't worry about playing three at the back. If I would play Wicked League Ultimate Team Decision, I would have probably played 3-5-2. So interesting chat there. So the conclusion is, most of it would probably risk it, but most of them won't actually do it. I'd risk it, but I don't think it's actually a risk. So that makes sense. That's a really confusing answer for saying, just try it.
Too many pins. I think if you have had three at the back variants already, whether it be with the 5-3-2 more so, you'll be used to defending with three centre backs. Now, I'm not. Every time I've gone to a five at the back or a three at the back, I find myself just a bit clumsy in terms of player switching and moving players around. And I find actually it becomes easier to score against me. I'm so used to defending at four with four at the back, bringing midfielders back, spacing out the defence. That's why that's what's stopping me from doing it. But I think if I committed to practicing, maybe that should be the challenge I set myself for the next weekend league, is to play a three at the back and become a master at doing it. I do think it offers a lot more going forward. And I think I notice more so in rivals, less in weekend league. If you play a lot of that, some of the players what I'm coming up against seem to be doing is they have a super aggressive first half, constant pressure, everyone in the box, and it feels like you're defending against the whole team. And then in the second half, they just sit back. So I'd be intrigued to kind of see how different variants of a three at the back would help or help in some of those situations, actually. Because four at the back in those situations really struggles.
Yeah. But I think it is a good point what you're making, that it's also just what you are used to. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's a very important part of it. If you're not used to it, well, try it. But maybe then I think the best advice we can give Omari is definitely go try it, but be sure to practice first before you dive into a weekly quid.
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt. I think any formation is playable. You just need to practice it. Know what your players are doing. Nail the player instructions and play to the strengths of the formation.
Awesome. So keep sending in those questions. If you want to be a participant of these live sessions, you can also support us. Go to patreon.com/footinreview and you can join us for as little as €3. And lots of big changes coming up very shortly. So you might want to hop on board before these happen, because, man, are these awesome. But hey, can't tell them just yet. But if you are, you get an invite to our Discord server, and that Discord server allows everyone that is a supporter from us to listen in live, ask questions, and see my very much sunburned head at this moment of recording live. I don't know, the last one is actually in like a bonus, but hey, you got it. And everyone else listening to this doesn't, so there's that. I don't have anything else. We can talk about content. We got these player packs, but yeah, just do it, see what you get. I think that doesn't quite matter. I think what does matter is, well, no, I don't have anything. What do we expect this week? I saw something with a South America team. Nishan, did you see that?
Yeah, it's already out. I mean, there's nothing to write home about, honestly. It's high rated players. I mean, it's just, it is what it is.
It's a sort of team of the season for South America.
Yeah, they're calling it team of the group stage. So, yeah, I mean, if you're into it, you can buy them players of the market. I think the most expensive player is probably 100K, if not 50K by now in the last 1 hour.
Yeah, it's not really that good. I agree with you there. Yeah, I think the most is 53K or something. All right, we don't going to mention these anymore. What I do want to mention is where people can find you. Nishant, thank you for joining again. You think it's time for you to get a rest after this long journey, but it was awesome to have you on board right away when you came back. But people want to like ask you questions, want to say something in Scottish to you, or ask you how the trip was. Where can they find you?
Oh, you can find me on Discord, on our community page, of course. I'm faulty_1NE. You can get me on my socials on Twitter at 1NE_Nishant. If you're interested, you can reach out. But I always respond best on Discord. So again, thanks for having me, John, Aaron. It's always a pleasure to be able to co-host with both of you. I always learn a lot. So thanks for having me on.
Thank you for being on. Aaron, where can people find you, my friend?
Aaron G at Twitter, on Twitter, in the Discord, forcoaching.com. That's where you'll find me.
Awesome. You can email the podcast these days. Just go to podcast@footcoaching.com. And you can, of course, find us on social media. Just look at Foot in Review on all social media channels. And, of course, keep hitting that like and subscribe button. We do not pay for advertisement, and we can only grow if you tell one other person about it and keep hitting that button. So, well, these services will actually recommend it. So thank you for that, and keep doing it. And you can find me, like Aaron said, on footcoaching.com or on footcoaching on all social media channels. And I think that's definitely it for tonight. We'll see you Wednesday, where Chris, Grandpapa Mac, will join me. And, well, I might have a surprise guest coming up. Someone who hasn't been on the show for a long, long time. But because I didn't get confirmation just yet, I'm not going to say who. But for now, I'm going to drop it and see you Wednesday.
Drop it.
Drop it.
Drop it.
You. 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 T. T. In view. You.